Golden State, number one offense in the NBA. Oklahoma City, number two offense in the NBA. We don't often get the number one versus number two offense in the same playoff series throughout history. It just doesn't happen that much. So if you look at the three-point era, if you look at the three-point era, it's only happened 13 times. And then it gets even better than that. It hasn't happened since the 2012 Western Conference Finals. The number one offense was the Spurs. The number two offense was the Thunder. Who pulled the upset? The Thunder. So now they can look and say, hey, look, we've taken down the most high octane.
Yeah, we've done this
before. And it's the same core group of guys, right?
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp. On the other line, we've got Ben Golliver. Ben, how's it going, man?
Man, it's hard to talk through these Tim Duncan tears. This is rough.
I'm in DC where it has been raining for three straight weeks. I don't really understand what's happening right now. It's Friday. It's May. It's supposed to be nice outside, so I'm a little upset.
Yeah, I just got back to LA after a couple of weeks in Portland in the Bay Area where it was beautiful, and it's also pretty dreary here, so it's sort of like opposite day, and everything seems backwards. The Thunder beat the Spurs, which really reinforces that notion to me. I'm still not really over that or really processed it. I mean, what did you take away from that game six? It was just disorienting.
Oh, my God. It was so game six. I mean, I don't want to come out with like the hot take on the Spurs, but I expected them to show up more than they did. Oof. It was pretty strange to watch them just kind of fall apart last night. And I don't know. I mean, I think they definitely have some real issues to address as far as like what they're they need a point guard, because that offense doesn't really work without Tony Parker without Tony Parker playing at like a quasi all-star level. So I mean, it was eye-opening to see them sort of turn into the Hawks over the last week.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like there was no effort, but there certainly was none of the desperation that you want to see in an end of season game. Kawhi, I thought, had some nice moments, kind of. But everybody else, it was just, where was that?
Kawhi was aggressive.
For sure. But where was that 2014 finals urgency of like, we have to make up for the 2013 finals, so we're just going to absolutely ram the ball down your throat every chance we get? I mean, where was that? And it was gone. And I think a lot of that's no Manu. A lot of that's no Parker. And I just, anytime the offense devolves to Danny Green dribbling, that's bad news, man. Like, that's not ever going to work out. And it seemed like he was doing an awful lot of just random dribbling around the perimeter, random dribbling through traffic where, not a lot of good things happen. At least, Tim Duncan had a fairly nice contribution, maybe his best game of the playoffs. But things fell apart really quickly for them. And the phrase to me that just popped out was overwhelmed. I just think they were overwhelmed by the Thunder in every single way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially, I think they started out hot and then the Thunder came back to tie it. And then there was a Kevin Durant dunk where it just sort of, you could feel like that the arena, even on TV, was like as loud as I've ever heard OKC. And you could just feel it slipping away right there. And then it just sort of like the seal was broken and the Thunder just went nuts. It was tough. It was cool to see Duncan come back and play well. But at the same time, the Ibaka block in the fourth quarter was just heartbreaking.
That was a really rough sequence. I mean, that was like, you don't want to ever.
It was like all you need to see.
Yeah, don't ever let your idols become your rivals or whatever. I think that was like that phrase, but in reverse. Like, you just don't ever want to have to see that happen. And that was bad. And, the way they handled the post game, I didn't think was great either. I generally am a Spurs defender on almost all matters, but Pop freaking out in his post game press conference, Duncan having no good answer for where he's standing in terms of his career. I think they could have prepared that part a little bit better. And I almost made me wonder, were they kind of caught off guard? Like, did they just not expect their season to be over at this point? And it fell apart so quickly that they weren't ready. I mean, even that exchange that they showed on TV, the back and forth between Duncan and Pop early in the fourth quarter, I don't know if they were talking about how much they were going to play him or how much he wanted to play when the score was kind of so out of out of hand at that point, you know, one-sided. But it just didn't seem like they were all there and like ready for it. And again, it goes back to that phrase overwhelmed. It almost seemed like they were kind of like mentally or from a preparation standpoint overwhelmed, just like they were physically and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, I think we also saw the Thunder expose some real issues that in the regular season, they're so well coached and organized that you can get away with not having the most athletic wings who can sort of initiate offense. But I mean, the lack of athleticism up front, and I still don't know what happened to Boris. I think he must have been hurt or out of shape or something, but like, they just had no answer for what the Thunder were trying to do.
Yeah, that almost seemed like a personal shot from Popovich at you when I was watching that game.
Because you
come on the pod and say, look, they got to switch this up. They got to play D out. And then Popovich is playing like the Austin Spurs and like their other D, you know, he's putting Becky Hammon on the court and he's not letting Boris see any time. And it's like, what's going on, Popovich? But I don't.
Where do you stand on Popovich post game?
Well, look, I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly from him over the years in press conferences. You know, in general, like I said, I'm a Popovich defender. I think in that situation, though, I'm also real big on like losing with class, right? You know, and the way that Duncan went over and hugged everybody, hugs Westbrook, hugs Durant. I mean, and that they really, frankly,
it was cool.
It's great. And I honestly think they taught LeBron how to do that during the finals, because you notice if LeBron loses a playoff series now, he's very careful to do that. I think it sends a great message. I'm not trying to be like the 45-year-old guy with khakis up to his nipples, but like, I think that stuff is good. And I think that...
No, I saw someone on Twitter last night say it was like the end of a hockey series where they just like, there's just so much history between these teams that I think they both have a lot of respect for each other. And it was cool to watch like people go over to Westbrook, like Patty Mills and Andre Miller were giving hugs to Westbrook. And like, I mean, I think the Spurs Thunder rivalry is something that we're all going to remember for a long time because they're just so different. And I think even the players recognize that like it's a special dynamic.
Oh, no question. I mean, anytime you can get two legends like Tim Duncan and Dion Waiters side by side after a game, I mean, it's truly special. No, but just to go back to my point on Popovich, though, real quick. I mean, didn't you feel like he was the weak link? I mean, he's out here trying to bully reporters off of fair questions and everybody else is like conducting themselves with the utmost class. I mean, I understand he's totally defeated, but it's not like the first time he's lost. It's not the worst loss of his career. And so give us something to work with and, you know, just be polite, you know, to a certain degree. You can be snarky and not a total jerk. I don't know if he like ran across the line last night. I just didn't think it was really the best look.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you've been in a lot of Pop press conferences. I was sitting in there, and had to ask him a question actually a couple weeks ago. And he just sort of has this way of like glowering at the whole room. And it's incredible that, I mean, it really does sort of silence people.
Oh yeah.
And, I'm surprised that he's able to get away with it the way he does. I think one-on-one he's fantastic. And from everything I've heard that he's just sort of like a regular guy, but, he really does sort of live this myth. And, I understand the people who are put off by it and are like, listen, like this guy's just being a dick. And it's like, there's nothing charming about it, but I still find it charming. I still enjoy his whole shtick.
Yeah. I'm with it 95 to 98% of the time. And actually, you know, I've been in situations where like, it's super awkward and like everybody's kind of, you know, crowded together in a scrum and he's going off on someone, whoever it might be. And, you know,
he has a way of silencing the whole room, even people who are like 20-year reporters.
Well, yeah. And there's guys who have covered him for like, you know, multiple decades who are still going through it on a daily basis. And they just kind of set themselves up as fodder for him and, you know, more power to him. I actually think the San Antonio media does a great job. I mean, you think about the market size, like how many, you know, options there are. The San Antonio Express News in terms of how they cover that team with the beat, with the columns. And with everything else, I think that, you know, they deserve a lot of credit because they've been doing it year in and year out for a long time. Anyway, I think that's enough about them.
Once we delve into the Express News, yeah. I think it's time to talk about the conference finals.
Let's do it. I'm so excited. Now I'm so excited.
Yeah,
I know. Well, you were the one who said the Thunder is going to make for a potentially a better matchup. And I think I just never really allowed myself the thought that the Spurs weren't going to be there because I've wanted it so badly now for 2 years. But now that we actually get Warriors Thunder, it's pretty rad.
Yeah, give me some stats. You emailed, I didn't even check it. You emailed me at like 2:30 in the morning last night. What are we working with?
Oh yeah, well, it's good to know that my hard work is so appreciated around here.
Well, I woke up and I was just like, oh, like I can't deal with this right now.
Okay, so here's the main takeaways. Golden State, number one offense in the NBA. Oklahoma City, number two offense in the NBA. We don't often get the number one versus number two offense in the same playoff series throughout history. It just doesn't happen that much. So if you look at the 3-point era,
yeah.
If you look at the 3-point era, it's only happened 13 times. And then it gets even better than that. It hasn't happened since the 2012 Western Conference Finals. The number one offense was the Spurs. The number two offense was the Thunder. Who pulled the upset? The Thunder. So now they can look and say, hey, look, we've taken down the most high octane.
Yeah, we've done this
before. And it's the same core group of guys, right? Now here's my real nugget, the one that I really am proud of. If you combine the offensive ratings of the Warriors and the Thunder and put them together into one number, that number is bigger than any other number one offense versus number two offense matchup in the playoffs since the 1997 finals between the Bulls and the Jazz. So we're talking about like ultra high octane shootout in this series.
Let's go. Let's go.
On top of that.
Oh, man.
On top of that.
Yeah.
The last three scoring champions are all in this series. Steph Curry, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant. And I think all three of those guys are easily in position right now at this point of their careers to win a game by themselves. You got a lot going on here just from a high power potency standpoint. And let me just, you know, read you a couple of these number one versus number two offense matchups from the past, because there were some good ones. So besides the Bulls versus Jazz in 97, you had a whole bunch of Lakers teams, you know, the Showtime Lakers.
I was going to say Kings Lakers feels like it should have been a number one, number two seed.
For sure. And then you also have got, like I mentioned before, Spurs Thunder. You had some of the Dirk Nowitzki Mavericks teams going against like Steve Nash Suns teams.
There were some great, great series involving those Dirk teams before he broke through.
For sure. And so and here's the last stat. When number one plays number two in terms of offenses in the playoffs during the 3-point era, number one is 9-3 in those series. So history says usually if you have that slightly higher powered offense during the regular season, you come out on top in the head to head playoff matchup.
Man, it's going to be good. So here's why I'm most excited about the series is it's looking at the Thunder. Coming into this Spurs series, there were so many different reasons that to not trust them. It's like you go down the line, whether it's they're playing Deion Waiters in crunch time, like, sorry, like I'm not going to buy in. Enes Kanter's defense. Sorry. Like I just can't do it. Billy Donovan, like Donovan had been uneven all year long. And I'm not sure how much credit he really deserves because he just had better players in this series and more athletic guys who put pressure on the Spurs. But he was, I mean, his rotations got much better as the series went on. And Westbrook too, like, I don't think anybody after that game three would have expected him to come back as good as he did. And I just think there's a chance that the Thunder this was kind of like a moment of truth for them. And they have been able to come through and come together stronger and are now a lot more dangerous than they were 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, we did an entire podcast, you know, around the premise of trustworthiness, basically just so we could call them untrustworthy. I mean, let's be honest about it. So,
yeah, I mean, like right up and down the line.
Yeah, and when Robertson's hitting three-pointers, like in closeout games, it's like, well, now we really got to rethink everything. I do think the Golden State matchup for some of this stuff is going to be really interesting because number one, Golden State exploits mismatches even more ruthlessly than the Spurs do. And if you have a weak link, they're going to find it. And then number two, if you're trying to like build a player to screw with Oklahoma City's front line, which I thought was really the difference in that series with San Antonio, right? Just pounding the glass, able to take away the interior stuff so that all the drive and kick offense that San Antonio usually gets just wasn't there.
Well, it would be and the Spurs just straight up did not have a player to punish Cantor and to draw Steven Adams out. I mean, that was their issue, is that all the guys that would have done that were about 3 years too old.
Exactly right. So if you were going to build a player to exploit those guys, wouldn't it be Draymond Green?
Yeah.
So
yeah, no, I mean, that's definitely a factor. And not only that, you look at, I mean, the Warriors are going to be able to basically have Bogut playing free safety in the same way that they did to Tony Allen, because Roberson is still, game six notwithstanding, is still someone you could just basically ignore on offense, and that makes their defense even more dangerous.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I actually think that they're going to have to go Waiters a lot more than Roberson as that series unfolds, which only
the Deion series.
I mean, you've got Deion Waiters, Russell Westbrook, Draymond Green, Andrew Bogut all on the court at the same time, potentially. I mean, there's no way something's not going to pop off. You know, there's going to be drama in this series. There's unquestionably, there's just too much, volatility. I mean, Draymond's out there like slicing referees now and just getting away with it. So, I mean, if that's the standard from the second round, and we're moving into the Western Conference
Draymond's
finals.
Draymond's routine with refs has really gotten pretty ridiculous over the past month or two. He's taken it to another level where he's just pushing the envelope so far every game. I mean, I'm shocked that he doesn't have like 25 technicals at this point.
You know, I'm actually with you, and I don't get on board with any of the Draymond Green criticism, and he leaves a lot of people upset. I think, you know, there's a lot of Blazers fans who were really mad at him for the comments that he made and how he carried himself and so on and so forth. I think his press conferences are just unbelievable. Like his two prediction press conferences back to back.
Oh, he's the best.
That was the best back to back press conferences I've seen, I think, in my entire career. It's just from a humor standpoint and from him owning the narrative and all of that. But the referee stuff, he does need to be careful. Cause look, if he gets, they have the margin for error that the Warriors have really enjoyed in the first two series where they didn't always need Curry back on the floor. They could kind of mess around and not really lock in defensively for four quarters and still beat these teams that they were playing in the Houston Rockets and the Portland Trail Blazers. That's all completely gone now. Like there's no margin for error against the Thunder. I know I've been kind of slighting the Thunder over the course of the year, but this is obviously a very, very, very good team. And if you look at the numbers from a point differential standpoint and an offensive rating standpoint, this is the best team, the Thunder, that the Warriors have faced during the Steve Kerr era in the postseason. You know, better offensive rating and better point differential than last year's Cavaliers in the finals, even when they were at full strength, you know, before the injuries. So they have no margin for error. Steph's got to be on the court for the whole series, period. You know, if anything happens, they're going to be in big trouble. Draymond's got to be on the court. He can't get two early technical fouls, take himself out of a game, and expect that to be all good. And just go right on down the line. Like, Klay's got to be strong. You know, he's got to bring no off nights, basically, from Klay Thompson. And then Harrison Barnes better do something. I don't know what it's going to be, but it better be something.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Draymond and the Blazers fans. One of the things that I'm happy about as a fan of a crappy Wizards team is that my team is never actually good enough to where like there's actually a chance of beating the Warriors. I think if the Warriors were something like a rival, I would hate Draymond Green. He would be my least favorite player on earth. But since the Wizards are completely irrelevant, I mean, Draymond's great. He makes everything more fun. And I think, additionally, he is the reason why I'm still picking the Warriors. I like the Thunder figured out a lot of different things in this past series. And I think are more mentally tough than they've been over the past few years. However, The Thunder are good enough for me to pick against Steph, but Draymond is him like on his own. He's a top five type guy at this point. I mean, he's just so good at like every phase of the game. That's a built in advantage that's hard to quantify, I think, but it makes the Warriors just a little bit too unfair to imagine OKC winning here.
Well, here's an interesting question for you that I think is going to be kind of a defining one for the series. Does Golden State have a better job of defending Kevin Durant or a better chance to defend Kevin Durant, or do the Thunder have a better chance to defend Steph Curry, or are just either indefensible in this series?
I think they're both indefensible, which is why this is going to be so much fun.
Oh man, fireworks.
Because I mean, if you look back at Durant, every Warriors game for the past few years, he's just like, he's cooked Golden State. I mean, so, and I don't know who you throw at him. I mean, Iguodala is definitely going to be their number one guy to throw at him. But at the same time, I mean, he's too short, and we've got a track record of Durant doing just fine against Iggy. So, and then at the same time, I don't think there's anybody who can guard Steph, least of all Russell Westbrook or Deion Waiters.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I think Steph's really going to have.
I mean, like Russ was great this series, but his defense is still an issue.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, we saw both defense and turnover issues in that series from Westbrook, you know, pretty consistently. But he did enough other things to make up for it, so he's fine. Yeah, I think, you know, Steph presents a huge challenge for them. And the way he was playing late in both of those games, I mean, that's really Oklahoma City's worst nightmare, because they do tense up a little bit. They tend to make mistakes. Golden State's clutch defense in that second round series against Portland, I think they held Portland to 33% shooting in crunch time situations, and a 90 offensive rating, which obviously is terrible from Portland's standpoint. So they can really turn the screws, and then Steph can take advantage of you on the other end. So to me, that's going to be the big concern from the Thunder standpoint. I don't really know how they handle that. I mean, they can try to throw length on them, but you know, Steph's seen it all. So I think he's going to be able to get his. In terms of Durant, totally agree with you. I mean, huge per game scoring averages every time he plays the Warriors. And I think a lot of it right now, you know how we always talk about LeBron being a little bit, you know, feeling overshadowed by the Warriors. We talked about that previously. I think Durant feels the same way, because these Thunder teams, these were the darlings before the new darlings, right? I mean, weren't they the team everybody was on board with from, you know, 2011 through 2013 as being the future of the NBA? And then the Warriors come through and just completely take that mantle and actually win a title. I mean, does Durant have any more need for motivation to kill a team in a series than he does against the Warriors? I mean, this is really it, until a potential finals matchup with LeBron, who's kind of owned him for his whole career. But like, you know, if you're on Durant and you're on this war path to try to like finally get over the hump, this is the perfect team to do it against in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely, OKC has been smart about it. They haven't taken shots the way that the Cavs have, but at the same time, there's definitely some resentment there. And I think all year long, they were sort of talking about like, nobody was talking about the Thunder, and that they did say that they weren't really getting very much respect. And I mean, here we go. Like, the Thunder have had fourth quarter leads in every Warriors game they played, and they are the one team that has the athleticism to really screw with the Warriors. And I mean, like the Warriors, for all we talk about Steph, the Warriors can't guard point guards. I mean, that's been their issue all year. So like, Russ will have plenty of opportunities to either win games or shoot them out of games.
That's exactly part
of what's so great.
For sure. If I'm the Warriors and I'm defending Westbrook, I'm going to take the Spurs approach to LeBron and just like intentionally sag off him to get into his head and try to just dare him to take any 3-point shot that he's willing to take, because I think that's the Thunder offense at their worst. I know he had some unbelievable.
There's definitely going to be at least one game where Westbrook tries to go shot for shot with Steph Curry, and it just ends in disaster.
Exactly. And I think that, I mean, that's sort of the way you're going to have to beat him. I mean, their interior defense is going to hold up just fine against Westbrook, I think. And also, they're comfortable in the transition game, getting up and down. So those advantages for Westbrook, I think, are somewhat neutralized against the Warriors, because they're good at those things too. I think it's going to be, you know, basically, can you keep him off the free throw line? That's going to be a big deal. And then can you sucker him into the low percentage shots, because he's always, you know, itchy to take those kinds of shots? You know, does he have the discipline to avoid it if they're just, you know, basically standing, you know, inside the free throw line and saying you can have whatever shot you want in pick and roll situations? So, you know, that's something to watch with Westbrook. But hey, I mean, he can go for 42. I mean, that's another amazing thing about this series is you have four guys, if you want to throw Klay Thompson in there, who each could have a 40-point game in this series easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Clay has been on fire for the past couple of weeks. So who are you picking?
I'm going to pick Warriors in seven. And they haven't been forced to go to a game seven yet during the Steve Kerr era. People kind of forget that. They're undefeated actually in games five and six throughout the playoffs against their various teams. So it's like once they kind of figure out who you are, they close the door pretty quickly. That's kind of been their MO. Yeah. But to me, I think Oklahoma City is really, really good. And they showed a ton in that series. They answered basically every single question I had about them, like we just ran down previously. And their talent level is super high. I'm feeling pretty good, but not great about Steph and his ability to hold up because he's going to have to play a lot of minutes. And, you know, Oklahoma City is going to come right at him and be physical with him. So to me, you know, an off night from him here or there and Golden State looks like a totally different offense and those games become, you know, much easier to lose. So I just see this series really going the distance. I think both teams are, you know, entering the series.
Oh, it's so tough.
I think they're entering
it's
with
so tough.
Don't you think they're both entering with pretty good momentum? And also Golden State's got this rest advantage, which I think comes at a good time for them. They needed that. A couple different guys were banged up. I'm with you. I think Draymond's the big X factor of the series because I don't know if Oklahoma City can handle him. And then I also think he's going to force them to maybe go away from some of their most effective lineups that they had in the last series. And how do they adjust to that?
Yeah.
So I think that's where I come down. Ultimately, I'll give it to Golden State. I think the home court advantage is going to be huge in this series. But I think it's not a coin flip, but it's a lot closer than I would have thought it would be, you know, even like a week ago.
Yeah, I agree. I'm in the same boat. And you're it's Oracle. That's a great point about Oracle. Because I mean, as hard as it is to win in San Antonio, there are a lot of times when you look at Warriors games and you're just like, I can't imagine anybody winning in that stadium because of the way they play and the way that the momentum just sort of builds and the crowd is just insane. So I think that definitely gives them an edge. And again, I can't really pick against Draymond. I just think Steph alone makes them unfair and then Draymond takes it to another level. So I'll go Warriors in seven. However, I mean,
I think you really want Thunder in six. Just give the pick that you want to
really,
give.
in my heart of hearts, I'm definitely feeling the Thunder right now.
Well, I think you should make that your pick.
I don't know. We'll see. I'll come back to this on Monday. Speaking of which, so here's another thing I was thinking about last night. Which would be more fun for you or for basketball in general? OKC Cavs or Warriors Cavs?
Well, that one you literally can't lose. I mean, either one's unbelievable because you get the rematch factor, KD versus LeBron, or you get the rematch factor, LeBron versus Steph. So I think, you know, right off the top, when you're looking at the headlining aspect of it, I think, you know, they're both A++++ because these are all guys who are sort of, you know, history type players. I think I would tend to want Warriors, Cavaliers, because I think the Warriors are just deeper, more talented, and they have that 73 win factor, which is always going to sort of be the tiebreaker to me. I mean, I want them to be in position to either, you know, seal an amazing season or, you know, bungle it on the biggest stage. I mean, either way, that's sort of
higher
drama, you know?
If LeBron takes down that 73 win team, I mean, he goes down as one of the five best players ever, probably. However, I got to go with OKC Cavs because if the Warriors make it to the finals, it's going to be kind of like they'll be 70-30 favorites basically. And I mean, it would be fun. It would be fun to see that team go down in history. It'd be fun to see LeBron potentially upset them. But let's say if the Thunder make it through the Warriors, I mean, at that point, this all hits another level. And then they go to the finals to play a Cavs team that will probably sweep the winner of Heat Raptors. And I mean, at that point, nobody knows what's going to happen. It's just a complete toss up.
Yeah, I was just going to say, at least we said the word Raptors on this podcast so that we can.
And that's the only time we're saying the word Raptors. I'm so done with that series.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways you can slice it. The LeBron angle, you know, the Cleveland angle is always going to be there. I mean, remember when Nike unfurled that gigantic banner during the middle of the finals last year, and they just like had like over like half the crowd, and it was, you know, talking about LeBron trying to finally win a title and bring it back to Cleveland.
Oh yeah,
and like Nike's not even.
That's one thing that like, I think a lot of that has been lost to history. How ridiculous some of the marketing got during the first year last year.
For sure,
he released like a 4-minute Beats commercial.
Yeah, and explain to me how Nike's even able to do that in an arena where there's like obviously tons of coordination when they're not even the official sponsor of the league. Like, what? You imagine being an Adidas executive, like, wait a minute, why in the middle of the finals is there this gigantic banner of our major rival? Like, what? Anyway, that's a side digression.
Yeah, I mean, that's just LeBron's Illuminati powers.
Oh, for sure.
They transcend contracts.
So, I mean, the Cleveland angle is juicy as it gets. And I think the Oklahoma City angle, like, that can really build too, because, I mean, you have this tragedy with their owner during the season. You've got Monty Williams, you know, family situation people forget about. And you've got Kevin Durant's upcoming free agency. I mean, that would loom over the finals. I mean, no question about it. You've got the pairing between Durant and Westbrook, where they're already in the conversation as the best duos in NBA history. They're way up there. And does that split up? I mean, all these things are going to, you know, be floating through a finals if they're involved. And then also you've got Durant versus LeBron. And I mentioned it earlier, but LeBron kind of owns KD head to head, you know, and that seeing that play out either with LeBron finishing it off and getting another title and cementing his legacy as the Cleveland sports hero against, you know, another great from his generation, or seeing finally, you know, KD getting a LeBron monkey off his back. I mean, either way, that's a giant win.
In my haste to put out that OKC Cavs finals, I forgot how badly LeBron has owned KD over the past few years. And especially, I mean, that finals was rough because he was just like, it looked like a big brother basically toying with a little brother. And I love Durant, and I don't know if I could handle that again. So maybe we should root for Warriors Cavs.
Well, the other upside of Warriors Cavs is, I mean, Draymond in the finals, now that he's like fully confident.
Now that he's also spent a solid year talking shit about the Cavs.
Oh, yeah. And
I mean, like, if you go back to the summer, like, he had a lot to say.
No, I mean, and Draymond's also on the, like, I'm wearing goofy hats to press conferences. I'm wearing crazy T-shirts that you're going to talk about to the podium. Like, he's on that level. So,
yeah, no, this is max contract Draymond that we've seen.
Yeah. So, I mean, that in the finals alone is a pretty strong argument for it. Also, I mean, what about like Harrison Barnes in the finals? I mean, I know we kind of go back to him, but like this free agency thing for him is going to be one of the biggest questions facing the Warriors, because everybody else is basically locked in, right? So if he has a gigantic finals, like, does he go from like this, you know, this complete afterthought to like, oh, we've got to keep Harrison Barnes? Or does it go the other way and he gets completely exposed by like, I don't know who he's matching up against, like J.R. Smith or someone? And then all of a sudden it's like he's the first guy that people are going to throw out the door. I mean, the stakes just continue to raise on every single one of these questions, every single one of these topics, the further that you go during the postseason.
Oh, the playoffs are getting so good. We survived that awful first round for this. It's fantastic. Let's talk Cavs real quick, because I feel like the Cavs have also gotten like sneaky fun over the past couple weeks. And it's crazy to me because, I mean, if you go back 6 weeks ago, it seemed like certainly LeBron and Kyrie didn't like each other. And then you could extend that out to Love, and they're just like, there were bad vibes all around. And now like they're joking around. Like, did you read the ESPN article on Lil Kev, the new like Cavs mascot?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, four words I never really wanted to put together were Richard Jefferson Snapchat, but I did read the article. And yeah, no, I mean, I think it's real. Yeah, and I think I have a theory about why.
Yeah, well, for any listeners who don't know, the Cavs they spotted on one of their private flights in the playoffs, they spotted a Tommy Bahama advertisement where the model looked exactly like Kevin Love. And then somebody tore it out of the magazine and laminated it. and has made that the unofficial team mascot now that they bring everywhere they go. They bring him out to team dinners and I don't know. I mean, it's just like, and basically the entire team is like ripping on Kevin Love, but Kevin Love is actually in on the joke this time, which is a change from the last 2 years.
Big breakthrough.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. They seem to be in a really good place. And I think while we all freak out for the next 2 weeks over Thunder Warriors, I mean, the Cavs are right there and are playing incredibly good basketball. Just in terms of the shots that they're getting on offense. I mean, like, the ball is moving the way everyone expected the ball to move 2 years ago when this all started. And now, and it's like, they look like that team.
Well, that was exactly what I was going to say. When you're looking at how did they finally turn the corner from a chemistry standpoint, it's like the oldest school high school basketball coach reason of all time.
Pass the goddamn ball.
Guess what? If you pass the ball and get guys open shots and they hit the open shots, everybody's happy. Imagine that. You would never believe it. And that's really what the case has been. And they've been hitting them in crazy volume. You know, I think the biggest question facing the Cavaliers right now, it doesn't have anything to do with chemistry. It doesn't have anything to do with, you know, health, any of these other circumstances. It's all basically locked in. I think the biggest question is, can they go from, you know, the third or fourth gear that's required to win the Eastern Conference Finals and then immediately jump up to sixth gear to beat who they face in the finals? Because that's going to be a gigantic gap in terms of, you know, quality of talent. And also, it's probably going to be a long rest for them too, because, you know, like you're saying, the Eastern Conference Finals is much more likely to go short than the Western Conference Finals. And so now you're kind of sitting around waiting and trying to get yourself back up to a level maybe you haven't even had to play at during this postseason. I mean, I think that's really the biggest looming question for Cleveland. Other than that, everything has been going perfectly. You know, LeBron's usage rate in the postseason right now is down near career low marks. I mean, that's the sign of a healthy offense where everybody else is helping him out. He's been rock solid in these playoffs. Kyrie stepped up, like you mentioned. You just go right down the list. So
I think what's great, I think also when LeBron is off the court, Kyrie can go into his ISO mode and not only, so he, like, I feel like Kyrie needs like 10 or 15 minutes a game where he's just like doing him and he gets that out of his system and can help carry the offense when LeBron's on the court. And then when LeBron comes back, the offense runs through LeBron and Kyrie has been off the ball. And I think that's just a really healthy dynamic in a way that whether it was Ty Lue or this just sort of happened naturally, like, this makes sense. This is how they should be playing.
Oh, for sure. And also, LeBron's in a position now where if he needs to go 48 for seven finals games, I mean, what more preparation could he have wanted? You know, like, they might not even need to take him off the court. Like, if you want to give Kyrie the ball for a few minutes in the finals, that's fine. But if you want to just ride LeBron all the way through, it's like he's been jogging through this postseason, basically, from a minute standpoint and a workload standpoint, especially compared to last year. So, you know, that's setting up really, really nicely for him. So I think, you know, spirits should be very high in Cleveland, and, you know, they've taken a lot of junk over these last couple of years in terms of, you know, Blatt related nonsense and all these other issues that, you know, be happy.
Yeah. I mean, here's a Kevin Love Instagram for you. It's a picture of the entire team at dinner last night. And he says, and the caption is, "True. Sometimes teammates become family."
Oh my God. So, holy cow.
Here we are.
We're getting sappy.
Family.
We're getting sappy, Kevin Love.
Really, really sappy. I love it. I love where the Cavs are now. It's great.
I need 30 seconds to go on my annual rant about how we've got to fix the conference imbalance, because we're not talking about the Raptors. We're not talking about the Heat. And we just sent home both the Spurs and the Blazers, who would have been awesome conference finalists opponents for the Cavaliers. Wouldn't you rather see Cavs Spurs or Cavs Blazers than whatever we're going to see in the East Finals?
So hold up. So what's your plan to fit? Keep in mind that I really do not like change.
No, I understand that too. So, but like the constant here is that we've had like 15 straight Eastern Conference finals that were bad. Well, not every single one of them, but there's been a whole bunch of really bad ones. And we've had,
yeah. And I really don't know what we're going to do about the East, because at this point, I mean, Durant's probably not going to leave. That's a topic for another pod, but, I mean, I don't see any franchise players that are going to go to the East and sort of swing the balance. Like, we might be stuck with this crappy playoff draw for at least another few years.
Yeah, so
probably five years.
I mean, there's a couple ways to do it. I mean, you could just seed 1-16 before the playoffs start and just expect that all the best teams are going to continue winning and that that's probably going to have more Western Conference teams than Eastern Conference teams. You could just keep it the same way it is right now for the first round and then reseed the eight teams that advance from there. So again, you'd be setting up.
I would definitely support that. So that would be a great move.
I think that's the logical compromise, because then that way you're putting some of these teams that are out in the second round with a better opportunity to advance all the way to the conference finals. But to me, the conference finals is such a big stage. And if you go back even like to the 90s, you know, whatever other eras people consider their favorite times, those conference final series are always rock solid. And LeBron, what's the best moment from LeBron's conference finals? You've got the Boston game for sure. That was awesome. You've got Lance blowing in his ear, and that's basically it for like the last 8 years, you know?
Yeah. It's sort of a formality. Yeah.
So
what he did to the Bulls like 5 years ago, when it was Derrick Rose's MVP season, that was pretty wild too.
Oh, for sure. I mean, but it was over quick, you know? And like, if he has to go against,
but those games were close. People look at that series like it was easy, but four of those five games were a complete toss up.
Well, I agree. And that was also one of the best teams that didn't have LeBron in the Eastern Conference, right? In the last decade, if you look at point differential and wins and all that, right?
Yeah, so it's really one of the only good teams that East has had.
So yeah, I'm not saying it has to be overloaded with West teams. I just want all of the best teams in the playoffs as long as possible. And so if it happens to play out that a team like the Bulls can make it to the conference finals and challenge LeBron, then fantastic. But in those years where we're dealing with the Atlanta Hawks from last year, who sort of fielded a team potentially, or like this year where you're going to have Kyle Lowry in a wheelchair trying to guard LeBron James, I think I'd rather see, you know, a team like the Spurs or the Blazers or whoever else would be in that kind of position going against them. All right, rant over.
Yeah, well, and under your theory or plan or whatever, I think we probably would have gotten Thunder Cavs and then Spurs Warriors, which would have been cool. I mean, I would support that.
It would have been freaking beautiful is what it would have been.
Yeah. So real quick, let's do a couple minutes on the Blazers and where do they go from here? I want them to get Boogie Cousins. I don't think that's even possible, but they need another big guy.
Well, this might qualify me as a hot taker. I think that this postseason run was amazing, of course, because it was totally unexpected. But I think they got maybe slightly a little bit more love than they deserved.
I think that's a good take. I support it.
The reason why I say that is, number one, the Chris Paul situation. I mean, that's why they're in the second round. If Chris plays that series, they're not there. So that's number one.
No, I feel bad, but yeah, go on. That's completely true. Like this, they were getting blown off the court the first two games.
Yeah. And then number two, against the Warriors, you know, Steph doesn't play for three games. So the series is automatically tighter because of that. Number three, the Warriors and just even Draymond Green's comments towards the Blazers, they completely treated them like big brother, little brother. They knew that when push came to shove, they could kind of do whatever they wanted. And during those clutch time situations, they just blew the Blazers off the court on both sides of the ball. Wasn't even close. And then, you know, my last point here is just they didn't even really extend their rotations that much. You know, Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, these guys are playing like 45 minutes a night, you know, unbelievable heart, will, guts and everything. And the Warriors are like, yeah, we're just going to keep throwing Anderson Varejao out there doing, you know, meaningful fourth quarter minutes. You know, there was kind of like a collective shrug, like the Warriors knew the Blazers were good, but they knew they weren't great. And so from that standpoint, I think the key for Portland, just the takeaway is, you know, you're in the mix, you know, but you're not quite graduated into that level of like, hey, perennial contenders with this core, right? And so I think that means, you know, that shapes your offseason philosophy. You know, you want to go for it. I think you should try to swing for a home run and get whatever big time center that you can find. But understand that, you know, it's very possible that next year brings regression. It's just as possible that next year brings regression from a, you know, a playoff standpoint, like they lose in the first round or whatever. Then it leads to building on to a conference finals run just because of the circumstances that shape their postseason this year.
Yeah. I mean, a couple things you mentioned. Once again, I have no idea why the Warriors put Anderson Varejão on the court. that's number one. It's like an elaborate prank or something from Steve Kerr. But yeah, I think the way the internet was reacting to this Blazers team, kind of as someone who loved watching them all year, it was cool to watch them get a lot of love. But I agree with you that it sort of, they got a lot of credit for playing the Warriors dead even, as if like it didn't matter that Steph Curry was out. And that also even when Curry was out, they like no one was really that worried about the Warriors finishing them and coming through in this series. So it's a little strange, and it kind of feels like the Rockets last year, where the Rockets got a lot of credit for making the conference finals. And I think a lot of us were tricked into then believing that that was the level that they were at. And it turns out that the Clippers collapsed, number one. And like the Rockets, if that Rockets team had played the Spurs, they would have been totally screwed. And they just were not, they were really not that great. And I think the true level of the Rockets, for instance, is somewhere between a conference finalist and the like shit show that they were this year. But I also think that's true with the Blazers, is they're a great first round team that will have to make some moves to get to the second round. Like they kind of feel like the Celtics of the West, except Dame is a real star, but they need another player.
Yeah, I mean, they need to figure out the center position, because Mason Plumlee had one of the all-time sympathetic, you know, series that I can ever remember. I mean, I really felt bad for him. I tweeted out a shot chart saying it was so sad that it didn't even need a crying Jordan face. And then immediately people sent it back to me photoshopped with crying Jordan faces all over the place, because he could not finish whatsoever in the basket area against the Warriors. And he's not the only person to have that problem, but you know, it was particularly embarrassing how he was getting stymied. I mean, it's just block shot after block shot after block shot. And then also,
yeah, they don't, I mean, you can't run Mason Plumlee out in the Western Conference playoffs. Yeah. Like it's not going to end well.
Never going to end well. And then he got so scared away after he got a shot blocked so many times that he's just looking to pass from the free throw line, not even looking at the hoop. And that makes him so much easier to defend. I think a lot of other things went well for Portland. You know, they had unbelievable health this year for their main guys, especially. And Damian missed the first stretch of his career, but everybody else was really healthy. You know, Alfredo Camino was on during the postseason, and you know, his shot's pretty shaky. If he's not hitting shots, you know, that's a totally different series. And then also you have the factor where there was a lot of guys who came in this season with just maximum hunger because they're playing for contracts, right? So how many guys had career years for them this year? Well, a heck of a lot. How many guys are going to have career years again for them next year? I think that's an open question. So that's why, you know, the focus for the offseason really needs to be on big time talent acquisition. And I think it starts with the center spot. I'm actually okay if they try to go forward with Aminu as like a starting power forward for them. I think you can kind of get by with that. You know, he did pretty well against Blake Griffin, although you know, Blake was limited, and he held his own against the Warriors too. So I think that spot, you know, you can pretty much call that one filled. I would just be looking at that center spot really hard.
Yeah, I can always count on you for cold hard Blazers reality. You're the one. Well, as people get excited.
No, hey,
no, but you're dead on. I mean, like I think people got a little carried away with what this actually means over the past few weeks. But I have another question for you regarding your Plumlee tweet. Do you think we've seen the peak of crying Jordan? I feel like I didn't see a lot of Spurs getting crying Jordan treatment last night. And it was fantastic as someone who's been sick of this for the last few months.
Boy, I never thought I'd have to answer this question. Like where are we in the life cycle of crying Jordan? No, I think crying Jordan,
I think it's dying down. There are a lot of think pieces being generated. And once something enters the think piece stage, we're like nearing the finish line.
Actually, that's a great point, because I read a piece in the New Yorker about it. And once the New Yorker's on, it's like, well, okay.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. I mean, it was a good piece of the New Yorker. You should read it by Ian Crouch. But I feel like, you know, the cycle has run its course now.
Yeah, I'm just worried that there's a lot of zombie potential with crying Jordan. Like, you know, you could think it's done, and then 2 months it's coming back and it's getting you. So
exactly. Knock on wood. I don't want to jinx anything. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I want to talk about one last thing here. It's one of my favorite days of the year, the NBA lottery. Do you have any lottery thoughts?
The Lakers better freaking get somebody. That's all. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. Like, I think that we've seen, like, just in terms of the whole Byron Scott situation moving to Luke Walton, like, there is this moment for them to, like, become this team that everybody roots for and, like, totally have this new look Lakers where, like, they're the underdogs. Like, they're the Blazers from a couple years ago or whichever other team.
Get a little dignity back. Yeah.
And just a little spunk, you know, like be that team, be the young up and coming team that looks like it has a bright future. But if they don't get a lottery pick this year, I mean, just close up shop.
it starts to get dark.
Come back in 12 months, you know?
Well, so first of all, the lottery is one of my favorite things about the NBA because it's just such a, it's like a night that straight up changes the landscape of the league. Like if the Wolves hadn't gotten the number one pick last year, nobody would have been talking about them as sort of an up and coming, like the next dynasty team. Tibbs would probably not be in Minnesota right now. And it's so random and so stupid. And it's a perfect example of why I love this league. And I mean, there's a lot that could go on this year because I think with your Lakers point, I think that if they do get a top two pick, I gotta think that they will package that with D'Angelo for some kind of superstar, whether it's Jimmy Butler, whether it's Paul George. Don't you think that makes sense?
I mean, that would be a very Lakers thing to do. I don't think that makes sense. I think you should build around. I think you should build around Ben Simmons. I've been saying this for months now. But yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I mean, it's definitely out there. So here's my question for you. Let's say,
first of all, I'm sitting here with the lottery generator on ESPN. So we're going to play the lottery a couple times. Lakers get number one, take Ben Simmons. Yes. Here we go. Yes.
So here's my question for you. Let's say Adam Silver just calls you up after this podcast. He's like, Andrew, like, you know, the league's pretty healthy right now, but we have a potential lockout coming up. I need this to be a big time NBA draft lottery. So I'm going to let you rig it. Like, it's going to be your scenario. You're really in touch with the young fan base. You can give the top three teams, the top three picks, any order, and then we'll handle the rest. You know, we'll let the auditors and everybody, they'll handle it. We'll get it done. Ernst & Young, they're in on it. You're fine. You can give the 1, 2, 3 picks out. Who do you give them to?
First of all, speaking of young fans, I feel like a lot of young fans don't really realize how shady this used to feel with David Stern in charge.
It still feels shady.
It still feels shady, but I feel like there's an air of legitimacy now that wasn't there 10 or 15 years ago. And
wait a minute.
Let me just say that I enjoyed that.
What about 3 or 4 years ago when Stern gave Anthony Davis to himself?
Yeah, that's true. That is really true. So maybe it is more recent than I remember. And also, I'm not in touch. As far as being in touch with young fans, I downloaded Snapchat for the first time yesterday and was super fucking confused. So I've got a ways to go as far as getting in touch with the 15-year-olds of America. The Cavs article about Richard Jefferson's Snapchat inspired me. I feel like that's a new frontier for NBA players to share cool stuff that they probably shouldn't be sharing. So I wanted to get on there.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you might want to delete that before the bachelor party.
Yeah, that's true. It's not a good thing. But if I were rigging it, I mean, honestly, I think you got to get teams in the East up there. I don't know. So if I were rigging it, I would put the Lakers number one and I would put the Celtics number two because the Celtics could then flip that number two pick for some kind of star. And then the Lakers could flip the number one pick to the Pacers for Paul George. And then the Pacers could build with D'Angelo Russell, Ben Simmons, and Miles Turner. And then suddenly the East starts to get a little bit more momentum over the next few years. And we can actually like look forward to an Eastern Conference playoffs that isn't horribly depressing.
Okay. I think I've got a different way to rig this. I want the Timberwolves to get the number one pick.
No, that's actually the only outcome that I'm not okay with.
Wait a
I'll
minute.
Be so pissed off if the, no, like we don't need the T-Wolves to have four top five picks in the, I guess it would only be three top five picks, but it's the too much.
Look, if we can give them Brandon Ingram, so
three number one picks.
Look, if they can have Brandon Ingram, Andrew Wiggins, and Karl Towns in the same starting five, they'd be so good they could bring Anthony Bennett back. I mean, that's how good they'd be. So I want to give them, I'm going to give them the number one pick, and then I want to give the Lakers the number two pick. And then I think I might be with you. I think the Celtics, they deserve it just from a karma standpoint, how they rebuilt so well. I want to give them the number three pick. And the teams, you know, Phoenix and Philly, you know what? Screw you guys. Like, both of you, your whole crews. And also Orlando too. We don't want Orlando to win. They always seem to win the lottery out of nowhere. Don't let them win. This whole mess with Scott Skiles, you don't deserve it.
Yeah, I have it. I mean, if the NBA were still corrupt, Philly would definitely win. Okay. after the
the Colangelo,
like,
takeover,
the Colangelo situation. I mean, it's like good karma after firing Hinkie. And so, I mean, I would not be surprised if Philly wins it this year. And then that'll be nice, actually, because we'll get to continue living in the corrupt NBA era.
Yeah, it's too,
that'll be our confirmation.
It's too bad Hinkie is still not the GM, so he could take Podol number one if they want it.
Yeah, exactly. Load off on size. So if you were Ben Simmons, I just played the lottery again. Ben Simmons is going to Phoenix. That would be pretty rough, I have to say. If you were Simmons, where would you want to go?
That's a really tough question. I think ultimately,
LA is always tough to turn down.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at off the court issues, I think the Lakers probably are the most attractive situation. There would be a little bit of a growth period there, trying to figure out who's going to be number one, who gets the ball in their hands. You know, how do you move Russell for some other piece, or can they play together? I think that's a question. But I think if I'm Simmons, I realize I don't have this perfect NBA modern game, right? No jumper. You have to be worked around. You have to have a coach who understands your strengths and weaknesses. Isn't that Brad Stevens?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Stevens is probably the best case scenario for him as a player, just because he's already so good at hiding guys who have weaknesses that he could get creative with Simmons. And in like a year or two, we would be pretty blown away by what they're doing with him, I bet.
And I think the other place, if I was him, I would want to go, and this is more off the radar, but I think the Pelicans, you know, if you're putting him with Anthony Davis.
I was going to mention the Pelicans. Yeah. I mean, that would be fun, because I also feel like the Pelicans getting lucky here is probably their best shot at graduating above this, like, I mean, this year was an outlier, but I still think even the Pelicans' best case scenario puts them in sort of the middle tier of the West. But if they get lucky here with a Ben Simmons, I think they would take Simmons over Ingram if they're lottery, or I mean, if they're number one.
I'm with you. I think it makes more sense. And I also think, just like imagining Ben Simmons in a high octane up and down offense, that's awesome. You know, that's really how that's how he should be playing, because he's such a natural, gifted playmaker, decision maker. I mean, I want to see him turned, you know, unleashed, sort of like a supersized Westbrook, and maybe not quite as, you know, strong as Westbrook, but that's what I want to see him running in the open court, you know, throwing.
And he loved his time at LSU, man. I mean, keep him in state. What could go wrong?
Yeah, keep him local. Yeah. Okay.
Those fans loved him. They'll never forget that this season.
Okay. So I said Philly and Phoenix are the teams I don't want to win. Who don't you want to win it?
I think the Wolves would be more fun if people didn't spend the next 5 years bitching about how lucky they got in the lottery. So I don't want the Wolves to win, and I don't want the Kings to win under any circumstances. Although if the Kings win, they swap with Philly, which is a nice Vlade flourish. So I guess the Kings can't win.
There's no winners. There's no winners in that pick swap.
Yeah, that's true. It's bad for everybody. I think the Raptors could be pretty fun jumping up after this year.
Yeah, so that was what I was going to say. Well, what about those super long shots? Like, are we going to give the Jazz or the Bulls number one? Like, would that be fun at all? Like, if you're the Bulls and you draft Ingram, can that make Jimmy expendable and now you kind of retool, or what?
Yes, I think the Bulls have to start thinking about retooling just generally. But I mean, let's also talk about the Wizards. I mean, like, the Wizards have a 2.8% chance, or maybe no, it's 2.6%. But I am not giving up hope, because that's also probably the best chance that they have of utilizing John Wall's prime to do anything. So here we go. It's a big night on Tuesday.
So who would you take? I mean, I'm assuming you would take Ingram if you got number one.
If the Wizards got number one, yeah, probably take Ingram. I think Ingram's the better player, except for a few situations here. But it's also crazy because I mean, nobody really knows, because we only saw like 4 months of both of these players, and Simmons was in such a bad situation that there's a chance that he is just has a much higher upside. But by the same token, Ingram was in a great situation at Duke, so he could look a little bit better than he actually is. But I like Ingram's game more than I like Simmons. And I think he fits on most any team in the NBA.
Yeah, I like Simmons better as a prospect, but I think his ideal fit in the NBA is a team that's just trash. Like, that doesn't have any pieces that you have to work around, because obviously in Washington, you've already got some locked in pieces, right? I mean, you got Wall, you've got Beal, neither one of those guys is really going anywhere. And you even got other guys like Porter who are sort of part of your long-term plans. And you just kind of you go down from there. I mean, the ideal team for Simmons to land on is really a place like, you know, the Suns or the Sixers, where it's just, you know, a wasteland and you can trade anybody. Everybody's expendable and you can kind of build the thing perfectly around him. You don't want to get him to a situation where there's like too much friction talent, because then you're going to have to make a lot of trades to guys who didn't think they were going to get traded. And that can get kind of awkward.
Yeah, I mean, I really got to let this fantasy go, because it's just definitely not going to happen. But the Lakers grabbing Paul George and then finding a way to get another star or signing somebody, whatever. And then Simmons, Turner, and D'Angelo Russell starting over in Indiana would be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
because he really does need to go somewhere where he can just be the guy.
Well, I think he would love being a Laker too. I mean, good Lord, can you imagine him? He's got that star power moxie. He's, you know, everything is there for him. I think it would be a really nice fit. They would love him. The fan base here would be just absolutely ecstatic about it. So I think it works on a lot of levels.
Yeah.
I just wonder what the Indiana contingent thinks of that plan.
It's got to be tough to be a prospective rookie staring down the barrel of like life in Phoenix or life in Philly or life in LA. There's a lot of different directions this can go. Although Karl Towns wanted to be a Laker, wound up in Minnesota, really liked it. So, I mean, things seem to be working out anyways. I haven't heard any complaints. So you never know.
Yeah, and also the flip side is, you know, D'Angelo Russell, like, if you're not mature enough to handle LA as a rookie.
Yeah, that's true.
And like, how many people
really didn't work out for D'Angelo?
Yeah, and let's be honest, if you're 19, you think you're ready for LA. You're ready for parts of LA. You know, are you really, really ready for it? And I think, I mean, that's why, you know, some of these guys who land in the small markets and they're okay with it, and like, they just don't, you don't ever hear them make noise about not being happy. I mean, you go back to Westbrook and KD when they were younger in Oklahoma City. You can go back to Damian Lillard, his first couple years in Portland. Like, if it's more important to settle into a franchise that values you, that builds around you, and at a place where you can just be,
that isn't insane.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that you know, some place where you can be comfortable, than it is to chase all this other stuff. Because, you know, if you're going to be a star, everything is going to start on the court. If you're comfortable on the court, you're in a situation that makes the most of your talents, everything else is going to fall from there.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, so let's go one more time playing the lottery here. And okay. It's my dreams. This is actually the best possible scenario. Celtics get number one, which they would almost certainly trade. Lakers get number two, take Ingram. Pelicans get number three, take Jamal Murray, which I actually like for them. And then Sixers take Buddy Hield at number four. All my Sixers friends will then commit ritual suicide after after 4 years of process leading to Buddy Hield. And the Suns are at number five. So that's our final pods lottery prediction.
Well, hold on 1 second with one thing you said there. Should the Celtics, if they win the number one pick, should they trade it? Are you sure about that?
No, I mean, I'm not sure about that, but it's just things I've heard that make it seem like Danny Ainge is getting impatient, and I don't totally blame him. But you're right. If they get number one or number two, they'll definitely have to think long and hard before they, like, it would have to be someone who's excellent. Like, I don't think like Blake Griffin would be good enough. I think probably either like a Paul George or a Jimmy Butler or possibly a Boogie Cousins. But beyond that, I don't know if it totally makes sense. What do you think?
I guess what I'm envisioning is this three guard lineup where you've got Simmons, Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley. You could shift Isaiah back to, you know, a six man role, which I think is more natural fit for him. But with that trio that I mentioned, you've got all the defending in the world that you need. I mean, you can lock everybody down on the perimeter. You can hide Simmons defensively on, you know, small forward, whoever is going to be off the ball. And then offensively, you finally have that creator who you've been desperately needing to kind of cover up for Bradley and Smart, who really aren't the best in that situation. Now you can turn Bradley loose as just the spot up shooter because the ball is always going to be in Simmons' hands. And you can just pray that you can turn Marcus Smart into a spot up corner shooter too. And all of a sudden,
well, so that's a big if, though.
Oh, for sure. That part, I think, like, is the question mark. But it's easier to teach him how to do that than it is to say, hey, become a true point guard, you know?
Yeah.
And so,
yeah, that's true. I worry about the shooting. I mean, basically, I think if you put the ball in Ben Simmons's hands, like, he's going to need to be surrounded by two or three guys who are excellent shooters.
Yeah, so then if it turns out to not work, then you can just put Smart on the block, and I think he's got enough there where people will give you something of interest. I just think, like, I mean, that talent level to that team, filling that playmaking and offensive initiation hole for them, that could be a really good team really quickly, I guess is what I see. And they've got some stretch bigs there too, which will help out. Olynyk, whoever else. Sullinger likes to jack up jumpers. Like, I think it could actually be kind of a fit. You know, I'd be in a situation where I would be, if I were them and I had a shot at Simmons, I wouldn't be rushing necessarily to trade that pick.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And Ingram is also the type of guy who could absolutely be an all-star for the next like 10 years or the better part of the next 10 years. So, I mean, they'll have a lot to think about. But this is why the lottery is great. This is all on the table for Tuesday night.
It's going to be fantastic. I love it too. I always lose track of it. You know, I get into the playoff grind and I forget about it. And then usually like Tuesday morning comes and then it feels like Christmas and I'm going through all these scenarios that we just talked about. So now I feel like we kind of spoiled Christmas, frankly. But that's okay.
Well, it's just such a stupid way to decide the future of the league, and I love it.
Oh, it's perfect. And anytime people say, oh, let's do this wheel scenario, let's change up the lottery, I'm like, bruh, come on. You're making it...
No,
you're making
the lottery is perfect.
You're making it less fun and more complicated. That's a terrible idea. You've already lost.
Yeah, we're in good shape. But Ben, this has been fun, man. I will talk to you next week. I'm not sure when we'll record, but... But yeah, man, this has been good.
All right, man.
But this time next week, we'll be freaking out about Spurs Thunder or about Warriors Thunder.
Yeah, it's so sad we're not saying Spurs, isn't it? Don't retire,
not,
Tim.
It's not sad.
I'm not ready,
this is,
Tim.
This is better.
Hang on, Tim. Yeah. You can do another year at least. Don't retire.
Oh, man. I'll talk to you soon, all right? All right.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.